Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include President Trump's firing of Fed Governor Cook and subsequent fallout, my interview with Arrive Home's Sean King on how down payment assistance is helping millions of Americans build generational wealth, and why we're seeing ARM production increase due to yield curve steepening. FHA fallout borrowers represent untapped market shares that can stabilize your shrinking pipeline. Arrive Home's earned equity program supports these clients on their path to meaningful homeownership. Additionally, FHA borrowers who don't have the benefit of family assistance are able to qualify using the nation's leader in down payment assistance. For more information, visit arrivehome.org. There are some big hitters in the mortgage, finance, and housing world who will tell you that the Trump administration's plan to sell shares in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could drive up mortgage rates that Americans pay. Shareholders want a return. Others will counter that the time has come to remove them from conservatorship regardless, that it's time to pull off the bandage quickly. Either way, mortgage industry observers are wondering about the fate of Fannie and Freddie in the wake of statements from the president and FHFA Director Pulte about a GSE IPO and combining the two housing finance agencies into one Great American Mortgage Company. And speaking of wondering about fate, President Trump yesterday took the extraordinary step of announcing the firing of Fed Governor Cook, effective immediately, citing allegations that Ms. Cook may have falsified records in order to obtain favorable terms on a mortgage, even though she's not been charged with wrongdoing or convicted of a crime. To fire Ms. Cook, Mr. Trump invoked a power in the Fed's founding statute that allows him to remove members of the board with cause. He justified the maneuver, a legally dubious one that could undermine the independence of the central bank, by claiming that allegations of mortgage fraud compromised Ms. Cook's ability to perform as an effective financial regulator. Ms. Cook said that she would not step down from the Fed. In a statement released through her lawyer on Monday evening, she said that no cause exists under the law for Mr. Trump to fire her. Quote, I'll continue to carry out my duties to help the American economy as I've been doing since 2022. End quote. Forcing out Cook would create an opportunity for Trump-appointed governors to secure a majority on the Fed board. While it wouldn't be enough votes to control policy rates, Trump appointees would have power over the reappointment of regional Fed presidents, which could theoretically impact the makeup of the committee in 2026. The Fed meets September 16th and 17th. Before then, we have Friday's PCE inflation report, the August jobs report, 12-month payroll revisions, and one more CPI report. Fed officials are divided over how and when to adjust policy in the coming months. Some have pointed to the labor market's resilience, and others warn that nascent signs of weakness in employment could metastasize into a more significant downturn. The minutes from the FOMC's July meeting noted the potential downside risks to the economy, from a slowing housing market on retail sales, construction employment, and potential slowing consumer spending as home appreciation slows. Fed Chair Powell's speech on Friday indicated the Fed views the potential downside risks to the labor market as more significant than recent tariff-driven inflation, which has led market participants to believe that the Fed will reduce the Fed funds rate at the conclusion of the September meeting. For today's interview, I want to welcome to the show Arrive Home Sean King to talk about how down payment assistance is helping millions of Americans build generational wealth. He's the Executive Vice President of National Sales and co-founder of Arrive Home, a national down payment assistance social enterprise for multiple government agencies. His relevant experience spans over 20 years in the mortgage and real estate space, consisting of tens of thousands of mortgage transactions, comprising several billion in mortgage volume. A teacher at heart, he seeks to help people better themselves through education, the value of homeownership, and the options to achieve it.
The kind of dueling paths. One is Arrive Home, the path that it's been on. Obviously, it's mostly known for down payment assistance, but
right.
It's evolving in its own way. Then you getting to the point where you're running Arrive Home now, kind of how those two have evolved, how they kind of came together and dovetailed and where they're going to go together. How's that?
I started Arrive Home with Matt Pettit. I think we can talk about Chenoa Fund, right? So Chenoa Fund is, we grew out of Chenoa. And it's this idea of, and I kind of want to touch on the idea of how national down payment assistance, this model has helped many, many people get in homes. I think that's kind of an interesting idea. Just the idea that had we not had this kind of innovation about 10 years ago, hundreds of thousands of people would not have access to home ownership because they just don't have this entice, say it all the time, this generational wealth, right? And so I think that's just an interesting idea and how we've expanded that and grown. From a business perspective, we've done amazing things in 3 years. Just the overall overarching idea of how do people gain access when affordability is just an all-time low.
Access to home ownership, home affordability, these are huge issues out there right now for millions and millions of Americans. And obviously, you saw this several years ago when you decided to co-found Arrive Home. You talk about kind of the original mission of the company, why home ownership resonates with you so much, why down payment assistance resonated with you as a way to help people get into homes, kind of lay some background here for people.
I started in the down payment assistance business before the crash. So I started it during what's called seller assisted, which is now illegal. So in 2008, the HERA Act actually made that version illegal. And just to give people background, what would happen is as a nonprofit would step in, they would make a down payment, and the seller would pay that amount back plus a fee. And that nonprofit had to have money to do that, right? So it was pre-existing funds, and nobody really liked that idea. But it did help millions of people from when it was started by the Nehemiah Foundation in 1999, something like that. It helped a lot of people. Whether it was a good method or not is really the question, but it helped a lot of people. And then the crash happened largely, I think, because of, you know, credit default swaps, the Community Reinvestment Act, and things like that. But down payment assistance definitely has a higher, you know, had a higher rate of default and foreclosure. And I got swept under with that. And it's kind of this tidal wave. You know, HUD actually, or FHA, had its worst years after down payment assistance had all washed out. But nevertheless, I got started into it during that time and then kind of just stayed with this group. But I learned at this time just the incredible difficulty that people have in trying to afford a home, especially first-time homebuyers. And I learned how essential it is to have home ownership to be successful financially in the United States. It's literally, and you've heard all the quotes. I mean, you've been doing this a long time. Like, you understand, obviously, that the average renter net worth is like $7,500 and the average homeowner net worth is a couple hundred thousand dollars. It's just, it's stark. And just checking that box, really, just getting people over that little hill really dramatically changes their lives. And so where do they get the money? Not everybody can afford a down payment. 3.5% is difficult when now house prices are, you know, the median in my area is like 400 and something thousand. And so some of these couples that want to put together the 15 or whatever, and that doesn't include closing costs. If the seller isn't willing to sell, if it's a hot market for sellers, you know, they've got to put together $25,000, $30,000. You have to make twice as much as what you want to spend to be able to spend it. And so it's just incredibly difficult for people, right? And so if they don't have family to help them, what do they do? And how do we really address this issue? And really, banks, they haven't really moved the needle a lot. But these types of programs that have kind of figured out a way, and we do it through a Native American tribe, a government entity, that we can offer a second mortgage behind FHA. A lot of the housing finance agencies can do it also, obviously. They've kind of started to move the needle. The housing finance agencies, they were largely monopolies for a while, right? They could do it by themselves. They didn't really have any competition. So they could set the guidelines. They could do all this. And so if they wanted to stop it at 640, whatever FICO score and have, you know, more DTI restrictions, that was something that they could do. And so when we introduced this idea of Native American National Down Payment Assistance, we started to introduce real competition to the market. Now there's probably five or six of these companies that do this nationally, but it increased the competition. So everybody had to get a little bit better and the options had to increase for homeowners. And just to give you an example, when my dad bought a house in the 60s, in the early 60s, he bought it for $6,000. His salary at the time as a journeyman carpenter was $5,500. So if you see the difference there, right? Like a $6,000 house and his annual income was very close to what he could buy his first home for. It's not even close. It's not even close. Even with dual income people, it's not even close. Like if I'm a $400,000 home, I mean, the equivalent amount they'd have to make is 300 and something thousand dollars to make that analogy bear out. It's just, it doesn't really work. That's the need. And supply is starting to ramp up a little bit now, but we're really just woefully inadequate on supply. There's a ton of demand. And it's not really being addressed.
My first thought was, can you talk about the underwriting behind some of the DPA programs? Because obviously people are cash strapped these days. Yeah. They're levered. Ultimately, it's almost like there's rewards down the line if we can get them over that little hump that you mentioned. And so I'm wondering if you can kind of go high level on some of the underwriting behind this or the rationale behind these lending decisions.
Everything has to perform, right? So it all comes down to performance. And when we really kind of dug into this, when down payment assistance went down the first time in 2008, we really kind of looked at what causes this. And our basic philosophy was, listen, well, let me back up. The bankers basically said, look, it's just a function of LTV. If they have more LTV, if they've got a better position in the property, they're going to be able to hold on to the property. That was their basic premise behind everything. And our focus was, well, really, if you have a very little LTV, even if they came in with 10% or whatever it is, if you lose your job, you get a divorce, you get very sick, that amount of money, that small amount of money, and the market takes a turn for the worse, that amount of money is not going to be able to save you, right? Like it's those, because those catastrophes that happen to people are just so much greater. And so you're gonna be forced to sell your property at a diminished market. And if the market turns for the worse, there's not gonna be a lot about what you're gonna be able to do, right? And so that was, again, a kind of a perfect storm of what happened in 2008. But today it seems to tick fairly well. FHA was designed to be something that has more flexibility, but very few people use it that way now. They just don't, right? It doesn't get completely used. The FICO scores are limited by how these loans can, and mostly how the second mortgages, I think, can perform. Like if I'm looking at the housing finance agencies, they want to make sure that their seconds are performing well, and that should flow through to their first mortgages, that they're performing well. I think that in order to increase, you know, obviously ownership, we have to expand some of those things to be competitive, but yet figure out a way to kind of mitigate risk. Payment shock seems to be one of the biggest ones that we see. If I'm going from, you know, $1,000 rent payment and now suddenly I have a $2,000 mortgage payment, likelihood is you're probably not going to be able to afford that house. And so that's probably the biggest thing to focus on. And I also think that FICO scores, they're not always the best indicator of whether someone's going to be successful. There is a great tool out there. I'm going to do a little shout out for FormFree. They have this tool that does a bank statement kind of analysis. And I don't know if you've heard about this stuff, but basically these people maybe have not great credit scores, but you can look at their residual income, which is what VA does. And I think VA is a great test, right? The residual income, the test that they do. That's kind of a better indicator of, all right, are they going to be able to make it through the bumps that invariably happen with people when they can't make their payments? And it analyzes how good they've been with their money, what they're spending their money on, not just from a credit perspective, but just the actual cash flow in their bank accounts. And I think that's kind of a better indicator. So payment shock is the thing that we focus on a lot more and try to take a look at to say, okay, probably not a great idea, or this is probably something that's they're going to do okay.
Yeah, but you mentioned this Chinoa fund, and I want you to kind of bring that to people's awareness, then how it fits into all this and why it's so helpful.
Yeah, so I mean, the guys that capitalized Rivehome, so the guys that came up with the original idea of using a Native American tribe as a government entity to kind of compete against housing finance agencies that had these state, you know, monopolies, that was three guys: Todd Ludlow, Rich Ferguson, Michael Whipple. These guys were the ones that kind of came up with this idea. And then they vetted the idea over a period of time. They went through their lawsuit with HUD in 2019. If you remember, they gave this opportunity for these other groups to come in and start providing down payment assistance anywhere in the country, right? And so that innovation was them. And they partnered with the Cedar Band Tribe out of, again, Cedar City, Utah. And there was just, after a period of time, there was a divorce, as happens in business relationships. They had a divorce. You know, things didn't work out. There's a variety of reasons. But it was at that time I was working for Chinoa Fund, and we were doing quite a bit of business nationally, and basically I got fired, handed the walking papers. I was loyal kind of to that group. And so we started Arrive Home the next day. We knew these guys would eventually come in and probably capitalize this, but mostly it was Matt Pettit and myself. We started in the basement. And then, of course, Todd Ludlow had started his group and kind of setting the groundwork, because he'd left Chinoa Fund earlier, setting the groundwork to get Arrive Home going. and to capitalize everything. And so we just, you know, and like any good business, we started out and we fell right on our faces. Like the first at October 2022 MBA, you have to have a Native American tribe, you have to have an investment, a purchasing investor, and you have to have a system to do all this, right? So you have to have somebody that's going to buy the first mortgages. We have to have a tribe that will do everything. And we had none of those things. Like they all, we had them all set up and then they all backed out at the last minute. So we went into MBA October 2022 and we sold complete air. It was complete nothing and did our very best to say, this is going to be amazing. We promise it's going to be so much easier to use and we're not going to, you know, make it so difficult for everybody, but we had nothing. So we didn't really have any success until the very end of the year. A very dear friend of mine who's in the mortgage business, I basically called him up and said, listen, I need some transactions. I need you to do some submissions. Will you do this? And he said, yeah, you'll have them by the end of the day. And so we put in our two first transactions and we got them on December 30th, 2022. And it was a great guy. I'll give him a shout out, Jason Smith. He was at Nova. Now he's at Cross Country. Great guy. And they put in a few transactions. I don't even know if they closed, but it really was a shot in the arm for our little company struggling to get started. And, you know, last month, our submission volume was somewhere in the neighborhood of $535 million. So we've blown up since then in doing that. So I don't know if I answered your question. I just went down memory lane there. So I meander a little bit, so I apologize for that.
No, it's good. We'll meander around here. Another thing you had mentioned to me was kind of this earned equity program. You're dealing with FHA fallout borrowers, EAD borrowers. Can you elaborate on those things a little
bit?
Yeah. And obviously everybody's going for this kind of competitive advantage or niche. And it sounds like you've really figured out what that is for a ride.
Right. And so you've got these people, and that's the whole thing. You've got these people that on paper, they've got some phenomenal income. They've got pretty good assets and it's unbelievable. Like looking at the bank statements of some of these people, they have, you know, $40,000, $50,000 as a small business owner flipping through their accounts every single month. And they've got six figures in the bank, right? But yet for whatever reason, they can't qualify. Maybe it's time. They don't have enough time to document their income or whatever, but they've figured out how to be very successful and to be very frugal in what they do. And so they look really good, but they just don't fit that exact box of having 2 years of whatever that they need. In not having that exact box, we can take those people, we can purchase the property using FHA financing. So government entities, it's called the Investment Property Exception, HUD 4001, page 159. Investment properties are eligible if you are a government instrumentality of government. So we purchase the property and then we do like a home buyer finance agreement with that client so they can gain the traditional rights of home ownership. They can retain control of the property and then work their way to qualification. So eventually they can do a takeout, whether that takeout is an assumption. A lot of people are choosing to do sells. And so we've had people that, because of, you know, great appreciation, they've been able to pay all the sales costs and then make a pretty good amount at the, you know, end of a year or whatnot, and then sell off, right? They also could theoretically do new financing. We haven't had a lot of people do that, but they theoretically could take the equity that they've earned, the appreciation they've earned, and move into, you know, a new situation. The downside is they're not on the deed of trust. So that client that lives in the home is not on the deed of trust. We're on the deed of trust, but we do give them rights of ownership by virtue of our agreement. And what a lot of people don't understand is I always ask people when I train them, I said, they associate that leasing is not owning and mortgage is owning. That's what everyone kind of, you know, associates. But the truth is with the lease, you own something. You do own something. You own the right of periodic possession. And so at law and a contract, like, so there is recourse for somebody if they are paying their lease on time and the landlord just decides to kick them out. They have recourse. So they actually own that right. And so ownership in the United States is really a grouping of rights and security. And so we give them all the traditional rights that you have in ownership. They have all that appreciation. We don't take any split on that. We just put them on a different amortization schedule than what we're paying FHA. And so that's how we bank the difference between the two to our balance sheet as an asset. But they're able to just pay, you know, as per agreed on their amortization schedule. And that's like just principal reduction. It works exactly the same way. If they pay it off, the property becomes theirs. We transfer the deed to them. And it's a way for us to really help them kind of use that money that otherwise would be spent on rent, they just throw away to build equity in the property and to utilize that and take advantage of the economic engine of real estate.
Maybe I should have asked this sooner, but can you talk about the mechanism for lenders to get approved with you or to utilize some of what you're working on here? Because the name of the game right now seems like even if I don't offer this product now, I can partner with somebody that does, whether it's down payment assistance, whether it's a home equity product, whatever it might be to cater to more borrowers. And so kind of approval process, how you work with counterparties, those sorts of things.
Okay, so yeah, the innovation number one, down payment assistance, we do that on a correspondent basis. So if you're a correspondent lender, you approve with us and you get approved for our purchasing investor. We have an LPA and we go through co-mergence, due diligence process, just like a normal correspondent relationship. That's how the majority of people access the program, or the majority of banks access the program, and then they're able to do it. We don't work directly with brokers at this time. We also have another innovation that basically, if you're a Ginnie Mae issuer, you can work with us directly to retain the servicing on the first mortgages. And so that's very powerful because almost all the housing finance agencies, I would say pretty much all of them and all the other programs out there don't allow that. And for years, there's this idea of spec payups that you could get, that as you sell these FHA mortgages, which have an attendant second mortgage with a non-subordination into a Ginnie Mae pool, you're able to get these spec payups, which sometimes can be very substantial. And so we take those second mortgages and we sell them off at a discount. That's how we make the whole thing work. And we allow them to retain. That's just a contract. So if I'm a Ginnie Mae issuer bank that has a desire to retain servicing on first mortgages, I can just reach out to us directly and it's a contract. We figure out a way to make the thing work with the try through an agreement. And then the last one is going to be also the same situation, the earned equity program. It's going to be a correspondent relationship where we set up a, you know, co-mergence and you go through an LPA and we're purchasing those first mortgages just like normal. That's the way you would reach out to me and I'd be happy to help guide you, Africa, to using us.
Well, you're preempting my next question, which is kind of, you know, best steps for somebody to take if they want to partner with y'all.
Just reach out. You can reach out to my email, sean.king, sean.king at arrivehome.org. You can obviously find us on our website, arrivehome.org, to find us, and then we can get you rolling on the application process. And we'd be happy to add you to our group.
The last thing I would touch on would be kind of how you see Arrive continuing to evolve from here, where it goes, how you would like to expand, how you continue to meet the shifting needs of modern borrowers.
We get a lot of questions for conventional down payment assistance, a lot. And so I would like to see that develop, but that really is going to come down to more the secondary markets with Fannie and Freddie and what we can figure out with that. You have to be a tribally designated housing entity, which we are, to be able to access that. Tule River is our tribe that we work with out of Puerto Rico, California. So I'd like to see that develop more because I think that could help many people in that area also. And if you have the cash, why spend it, right? So use that for the other bumps that are down the road rather than using credit to handle any kind of difficulty. But I'd like to see conventional get built out a little bit more. We have a partnership with Mountain West Financial now, which is very exciting. They're a Ginnie Mae issuer. So we're very excited about that moving forward as being one of our purchasing investors. And so that's going to give us access to programs. A lot of people ask us if we can do these with the rehab stuff, 203K. We've played around with the idea. They want to see it happen more. And the builder space is another huge idea, right? So all of these builders compete on interest rate. And we'd like to see this. And there's massive amounts of FHA lending that's happening with new builds still. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to see some space grow there also and come up with some products that can really make the building work out. I guess the building side work out. So that's it.
Very cool. I wish you the best of luck. Pleasure talking to you, and hopefully this is the first of many of these that we do.
Sounds good. Thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
The yield curve is growing steeper, especially if the Federal Reserve cuts overnight rates, but 30-year rates don't move much. If I'm a bank and I'm paying customers less than 1% on their deposits, but loaning it out at 5 or 6%, that's a sweet spread. So into the portfolio it goes. Meanwhile, brokers and independent mortgage banks continue to search for buyers of adjustable rate mortgages or loans with little success. Banks and credit unions have enough arm volume coming from their branches. Case in point, 70% of JPMorgan Chase's pipeline last month was arms. The market followed Friday's strong rally with an uneventful start to the week in both equities and treasuries. New home sales slid 0.6% in July to a 625,000 annual pace. Upward revisions to prior data simultaneously revealed that transactions were on stronger ground than previously thought. Nevertheless, sales slipped 8.2% year-over-year, implying that high mortgage rates, economic uncertainty, and a softening labor market are keeping buyers on the sidelines. Single-family home builders face the added pressure from elevated inventories, which is likely to discourage a near-term rebound in single-family construction. Today's economic calendar kicked off with durable goods orders for July, falling 2.8% versus negative 4.0% expectations, and Philadelphia Fed non-manufacturing for August, which came in down 17.5 versus negative 10.3 prior. Later today brings Redbook same-store sales, June house price indices from Case-Shiller and FHFA, consumer confidence in August, Richmond Fed manufacturing and services, Dallas Fed Texas services, Treasury activity that will be headlined by $69 billion, into your notes and a buyback for liquidity purposes, in 5-year to 7-year coupons for up to $4 billion, and remarks from Richmond Fed President Barkin. We begin Tuesday with agency MBS prices slightly worse versus the close yesterday, the 2-year yielding 3.70 and the 10-year yielding 4.28 after closing yesterday at 4.28%. Let's wrap up with the joke and some housekeeping. I love how sleeping in used to mean waking up at noon, but now it means waking up at 8:30. Thanks again to Arrive Home for sponsoring today's podcast. FHA fallout borrowers represent untapped market shares that can stabilize your shrinking pipeline. Arrive Home's earned equity program supports these clients on their path to meaningful homeownership. Additionally, FHA borrowers who don't have the benefit of family assistance are able to qualify using the nation's leader in down payment assistance. To learn more, visit arrivehome.org.